Truth Seekers, Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. How you doing? You okay? Welcome to the program tonight. I'm glad you could tune in. Stick around for a while. This may be the night that we push you completely over the edge and you wind up babbling in the middle of the night. Or not. You never know on this program, right? We were watching a little bit of television news tonight. I don't know why Kathy and I still do that, but we do. Just for the torture factor, I guess. Oops, wrong word to use. Just for the discomfiture factor, I guess. We're watching, I think it was NBC or ABC. It doesn't matter. They're all the same. Anyway, the story comes on about the world rice. There's a rice shortage. Or, no, the price of rice has doubled. Gone up 104, I'll get it right, 120, 130% since January. And then the guy comes on and says, well, that's not because there's a rice shortage necessarily. It's because people are afraid there's going to be a rice shortage. So the price is going sky high, which means very simply that that vast segment of the global population that for whom rice is a staple, much the way corn or wheat is a staple in this country, those people now are seeing rice priced out of their ability to buy it. For no reason, no reason. And the story went on to mention the food riots that have occurred in Haiti, a couple of countries in Africa, Indonesia, a province or two in China, maybe a state or two or three in India. Riots where people are being clubbed by the police and some are dying because of this food problem. Rice and other food supplements. Now, we mentioned this very briefly last week, that as so-called third world countries or emerging economies, that means countries that have decided to join the race to destroy the earth with carbon dioxide, those emerging economies now, as they build more factories and put more crap on the world market for more stupid people to buy, as they continue to join the club that pollutes its streams, befouls its own nest, as they do that, you see, their appetite for better food comes into play. Now, what's better food? Animals. These are people whose diets have, for the most part, been grains, fruits, vegetables, fish. But now they want domesticated animals to a greater degree than they have been, you know, ducks, chickens, pigs, cattle. And you know what that means, of course. That means that land that normally would be used for planting crops now is cleared and turned into pasture or feedlots where animals can be tortured into eating and sucking down all kinds of antibiotic and hormone-laden glop. All right. So we're sitting there watching. You know, we took a five-minute break, for God's sake. We're watching this, and Kathy turns to me and said, a rice problem? Food? Is there anything that is working right now? Every time you turn around, the whole place, everything's falling apart. Checking accounts, saving accounts, mortgages, the environment, the air we breathe, the water we drink, the frogs are dying, the bees have disappeared, rice is going off the chart, hogs and pigs are, I don't know, they're eating each other. Every time you turn around, more, it keeps coming. Look at gasoline prices, look at food prices. I went to a farmer's market here today and bought a package of organic broccoli that came all the way from California. Okay, I shouldn't do that, right? I live in Georgia. I shouldn't do it. But Georgia broccoli is not available, at least not to me today. So I bought the California broccoli. And it was $4 a pound for broccoli. Now, I got the bag that said 20% off because some of the broccolis looked a little dodgy. But that's still $320. When does it stop? When do we start getting some new? And then Petraeus now is going to be the new CENTCOM commander. That means when Admiral Fallon is finally gone in a couple of weeks, the guy who was single-handedly holding back World War III, and then Petraeus, this ass-kissing, apple-polishing thug, gets in there and he says, "Oh, okay. What do you want me to do, George? Dick? anything you say, guys." It's just astonishing. If it weren't for bad news, there'd be no news.
Yeah, what really got my attention on the news tonight was how it just seemed like there was such a weird variety of news that I'm just not accustomed to. I'm used to bad news stories about violence or floods or hurricanes or
gang violence, people getting shot,
schools being shut down because children are blowing. I mean, that's the kind of bad news I'm used to. I'm just not used to bad news stories about rice shortages and schools having to close in California because there's not enough property tax money coming in because of the subprime mortgage crisis.
The foreclosures, right.
You know, to cover expenses for local education. I mean, that's just not the... I mean, that's like news you expect to hear out of the Soviet Union in the 40s or something. I don't know. It's just not news I'm used to hearing about rice shortages.
So what a leader...
Freaks me out.
What a leader Bush has been, huh? What a leader. What a guy. Now, if you're a right-winger lurking around the program and you want to call in and say, "Bush didn't cause this," I have one answer for you. You're out of your goddamn mind. Of course he caused it. It's all his fault. Completely George Bush's fault. Because why? Not only because of the things he's done, but because of the things he's not done. There has been no leadership worth a damn in this country since this little pissant was sworn in on the theft of an election, handed to him by five right-wing Supreme Court judges. Of course it's Bush's fault. Absolutely Bush's fault. Every bit of it, all of it, every last drop is his fault because he is not a leader. You want more? Vote for John McCain. And to the people in Pennsylvania, who I think 27% of you on the one hand and 18% of you on the other hand said that if Hillary Clinton is, Barack Obama, I think. Pennsylvania, in the exit polls, the so-called blue-collar working class, what do they call them now, lunchbox Catholics. How demeaning is that? Lunchbox Catholic. Son of a bitch. American media comes up with the damnedest way of slicing and dicing us, right? Soccer moms and bowling t-shirt men and lunchbox Catholics, according to the exit polls. I heard this today, too. 27% of them have made it very clear they're not going to vote for no Negro. These are Democrats. I'm talking Democrats. They're not going to vote for no Negro. Nah. The so-called blue-collar lunchbox white ethnics in Pennsylvania have made it clear to the pollsters, nah. And if I don't like Hillary, or if I don't like Obama and he gets the nomination, I'm voting for McCain. You dumbasses. Can you people say stupid? What part of shoot yourself in the foot do you not understand? I don't like Obama. Why not? Something about his policies you don't like? No. Something about his attitude, his education, his position on certain issues? No. What is it? He's a Negro! I ain't voting for no Negro! That's what you people are saying. And I swear to God, you are making me sick to my stomach.
mentioned early on that I recognize there are hurdles, and we're going to achieve those hurdles. There's no doubt in my mind we will.
Well, I'm all for achieving hurdles. So one gets the sense that, you know, the center is not holding. Things fall apart. What weird beast slouches... Oh, no, wait. Somebody else said that. And here's John McCain. Did you see McCain today? Did you see what he did today? I mean, this is astonishing. I don't know who sends him to places like Youngstown, Ohio, which he certainly should not go to. But he stood before one of those factories that is shuttered. The hinges are rusty. The chains around the gates and the locks, the padlocks. It's apparent they've been shuttered for a long time.
Goodbye.
Factories that used to provide a decent living for the people who lived in this instance, Youngstown. And he stood there with this factory pockmarked with broken windows behind him in a city. I know Youngstown. It's a city devastated by the absolute dismantling brick by brick of its industrial base. It's gone. Youngstown used to be the fifth or sixth largest city in Ohio. And now it's such a ghost town that entire blocks of abandoned houses are being torn down and hauled off, and the lots are being seeded over, the sidewalks are being torn up. This is like the first time this even happened in the Depression, in the history of America, where former industrial-based cities are, they've lost so much population. I think Youngstown has lost half of its population in the past 40 years. There stands McCain in front of a shuttered, rusted, broken-windowed factory. And he urged the citizens of Youngstown and Americans to reject what he called the siren song of protectionism and embrace even more so-called free trade. It's astonishing. And I hope the people in Youngstown were listening to what this psychopathic jackass was saying to them. Now, he went on, he used his own recent political fortunes, you know, that he had that awful fade after New Hampshire or whatever, and then he had a comeback, and then he secured the Republican nomination, more or less, and he used that to illustrate to the citizens of Youngstown that depressed Rust Belt cities like theirs can rebound! By damn, if John McCain did it, Youngstown can do it. This is toxic narcissism to the point where it's almost contagious. The reference is all him. Look what I did, my friends. Look, you can do it too. See this factory behind me? Well, all this factory has to do is go on and win the primary in South Carolina, and it will open. And all your dumbass little jobs will come back, and you all will vote for me. Like you all voted for Reagan 28 years ago. Aren't you glad you did that? Right? He said at a speech at Youngstown State University, quote, a person learns, my friends, along the way that if you hold on, if you don't quit, no matter what the odds, sometimes life will surprise you, end quote. Yeah, John, and sometimes while you're holding on, your ass starves to death. And you lose your house. And your children can't go to school. And you can't afford to put the extra money into your elementary school kid's pocket so he can buy lunch. What the hell is this man talking about? You talk about deluded. You talk about out of his freaking mind. Sometimes life will surprise you. That's right, John. And sometimes life will absolutely, utterly, completely, and totally destroy you. Now, he said that at a speech in Youngstown State University after meeting the five, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the five remaining workers at Fabart, which is a steel fabricating factory that a couple of years ago had over 100 employees. Five left. Five. And what do you think they're making? Huh? $10, $11 an hour, maybe? He's on his week-long tour of what he calls the Forgotten America. And McCain called in the same speech for increased use of community colleges to retrain workers. John, what are they to be retrained to do in Youngstown, Ohio? What? You think things are bad? Vote for McCain. You racist little twits, you Democrats in Pennsylvania who wouldn't vote for Obama if your life depended on it. Let me tell you something, you dumbasses. Your life does depend on it. Twenty-five before the hour. So, continuing his tour of what he calls the Forgotten America, McCain, as I mentioned, called for increased use of community colleges around the country to retrain workers, and which raises the question: to do what, John? And who's going to pay the tuition? And who's going to make sure that there are instructors there? Community colleges are usually paid for with state funds. If the state is going down the pipes financially, which so many states now seem to be operating in the red, unless I've read that wrong, where's the money going to come from, John? You pie in the sky jerk. I don't know. You seem to approach the real world the way Reagan did, only without the charm and the good looks and the normal looking face. You really do. You really do. Reagan was absolutely so far out of touch with reality. He thought he was playing the part of the president, which he was, and he did a damn good job playing the part of the president. As long as he had lines, as long as he was scripted. But he was a sunny kind of personality and handsome. And he'd been in America's homes for decades as a pimp for General Electric and borax and all sorts of stuff that is just absolutely poisonous to the environment. But you, John, no, you're certainly no Ronald Reagan. So what are these retrained workers supposed to do? He went on to say the American Midwest is more than a rust belt. And its economy is more than a sum of past hardships. What does that mean to a family still living in Youngstown, John, who have not had gainful employment in, maybe 4 years, where the father works at a loading dock somewhere making $8 an hour, the mother is a nurse's aide making $6, three of the four kids have had to move back home, and they all work in fast food joints. And you're going to say to those people that the economy in Youngstown is more than a sum of past hardships? Oh, my God. Youngstown has lost more than 40,000 jobs since the steel industry. That city used to be the number three steel-producing city in America. Number three, 40,000 jobs gone since the 80s. Its population at its peak was 170,000 people. Now it's 80. 25% of those who remain in Youngstown live below the poverty line. 25%. Don't you think that preaching the virtues of free trade in a place like Youngstown is a bit patronizing, condescending, and somehow out of touch with anything resembling so-called straight talk? What are the people doing there who listen to this guy? When they go home after hearing his speech, do they go home and say to their spouse, well, I heard John McCain today. Yep, I guess we're going to vote Republican. Why? I can't vote for a Negro, and Hillary can't vote for a woman. So, and besides, you know, if I vote for Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, they might make it so the queers can get married, and you know, the Pope doesn't like that. So it looks like it's going to be McCain. Now, McCain lost the Republican primary in Michigan, probably because he told workers there that their jobs aren't coming back. And this is so true with politicians here in the United States of America. You tell the truth, bro, and your ass is going down. You are not going to be elected dog catcher if you tell the truth. Hi, I'm running for dog catcher, and we will hold the dogs for 4 days and then execute them. That's the truth. But that guy's not going to get elected. When John McCain says to the voters in Michigan, folks, my friends, your jobs are gone, my friends. They're a distant memory, my friends. And here's something you can take to the bank. Oh, excuse me. You don't go to the bank. Here's some straight talk for you. Your jobs are not coming back. Boom! There goes McCain. Mitt Romney won the primary in Michigan. And you know why? Why did Mitt Romney win a Republican primary in Michigan? Because he told the dunderheads that he was going to make their jobs come back. Hi, I'm the job fairy. My name's Mitt Romney. If I'm president, you know what I'm going to do? You see this bag I'm holding up? It's a large bag, isn't it? Well, I've got more of these bags in my garage, one of my 20 garages at my 20 houses scattered around this great country. I'm a Mormon, you see. You know what's in this bag? Magic job fairy dust. That's right. And when I'm elected, when I'm your president, and if you don't vote for me, it just clearly means you're a religious bigot. But when I'm elected president, I am going to take this big bag of fairy dust, and I'm going to get in one of my private jets, and I'm going to fly all around Michigan, and I'm going to scatter this out that door thing in the back. I am. And all this fairy dust is going to fall on Michigan. All your jobs are going to come back. And everything will be fine. Just vote for me. And you know what? They did. They, by God, did. John McCain stands there on the back of a flatbed truck near the almost closed down or completely closed down River Rouge Ford Assembly Plant. I remember that when I was a kid, Truth Seekers. And he says, my friends, bad news. You notice the jobs are gone. Guess what? They're not coming back. But we want to get some money into community colleges, my friends, and retrain you to be door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman or something. During a town hall meeting in Youngstown that this report, by the way, by Matt Stearns at McClatchy Newspapers, one of the few newspaper organizations left in the United States that is absolutely reliable and absolutely truthful and absolutely goes for the gut, McClatchy Newspapers. During a town hall meeting in Youngstown with McCain, former local labor leader Jack O'Connell stood to denounce NAFTA as a bad four letters. And McCain pointed out the NAFTA is five letters. Five letters. Sit down. Former local labor leader Jack O'Connell, you're dealing with John McCain, straight talking McCain. NAFTA has five letters. Now, you see, my friends, that's the reason, my friends, we need community colleges, my friends. If Jack over there would have understood, my friends, that NAFTA has five letters and not four, my friends, he would probably get a good job downtown there at one of those six stores remaining in downtown Youngstown that sells shoes. But he didn't know that. So, Jack O'Connell pointed out that what he meant was NAFTA is like a four-letter word, as in GU, John. In response, McCain said again that those jobs were gone forever, and he defended NAFTA as an overall plus for the U.S. economy. For who, Mr. McCain? Who has it been a plus for? Oh, it's been a plus. But for whom? Huh? For whom? I don't know. Anyway, the Democratic National Committee, never wanting to miss a chance to point out the asininity of the Republicans' comments, the DNC said, quote, "It may be a photo op for John McCain, but people in Youngstown and cities across America are really hurting from the Bush economy and looking for real help." Howard Dean, in releasing that statement, went on to say McCain's only plan is to continue Bush's failed economic policies, but the American people are saying enough is enough. Well, Howie, I hope that's the case. I really do. But, you know, if recent history is any sort record of what the American people are going to do, they're just going to vote for another Republican, whether it's Hillary Clinton or John McCain. They're just going to continue these policies. Did we have a phone call from Youngstown? Well, close enough. Rob is calling from Minnesota. I thought you were calling from Youngstown or Akron or Cleveland.
No, it's better. You know, I mean, that's okay. I think I'm talking on the air now.
Yeah, you are. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Mike. It's one of those things. Great to talk to you again. You forgot about Akron and Cleveland and Detroit and all these other great cities that are out there.
Yeah, and Toledo, the one I grew up in.
Yeah, and the whole thing is when I used to cross over the bridge from Detroit to Canada, Windsor, Ontario. Let me think. I think it was Windsor.
Yeah, and Windsor, Ontario. Over
yeah,
there
and the whole thing is when you take when you cross over the bridge, you see these beautiful cities on the one side of Canada, and the whole thing is when you cross back the other way, all the ghettos that are in Detroit, you know? I mean, what is wrong with this? What was wrong with this idea? You know, I mean, America the Great?
Well, what do you attribute those ghettos to?
I think American policy, because Canadian policy might be a little different than we are, you know. I mean, I saw all these in Akron, Ohio, you know. I mean, all of these big buildings over there, you know. I mean, acres of parking for people where they used to work in these big buildings, and now all of a sudden I go in there and I pick up loads. What am I picking up loads for? Recycled paper. You know, they used to be able to take and have high-dollar jobs over there. They're not there anymore.
All right, now, you're talking about in Ohio?
Yeah, Akron, Ohio.
In Akron, Ohio. So you go there and you pick up recycled paper.
Yeah, where, you know, I mean, these are the buildings that used to be able to take and make all of our rubber to be able to take and make America move, you know?
I hear you. Well, Rob, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We got a break here. We'll be right back. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Zone. So I can watch you.
9 before the hour, Mr. Bill writes from Allentown, PA. Hi, Mike. I live in Allentown, voted for Obama. Some of the problem up here was the Rush Limbaugh tactics. I ran into a few of these people who became Democrats just to vote for Hillary. A lot of the Hillary supporters in PA are actually Republicans. I'm just as pissed as you are. Didn't go anywhere near the media until your show last night, and the depression didn't set in until I woke up this morning. Those that voted for Hillary would vote against Obama if he's the nominee. Yeah, that's that. You know, white people knew this. White people over a certain age knew that the race factor was going to raise its horny head. And by horny, I mean horns on it. And Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton did their subtle best to get the issue out there. Just like Ronald Reagan made it legit and almost hip to be a racist when he announced he was going to run for president by going to Philadelphia, Mississippi. Huh? Philadelphia, Mississippi. Son of a bitch. This is the same guy that went to the Bitburg SS Nazi cemetery in Germany. Same guy. After he was elected. But the reason Reagan did that was to say to white America, hey, mommy, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hi, see the shining city on the hill? Notice there are no Negroes in it. Reagan made it cool to be a racist again. We were kinda, sorta, a little bit, maybe, inching away from it. But Reagan came into office and made his announcement he's running for president in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Give me a freaking break. And a lot of Reagan historians now have said, oh, that was just coincidence. I think Pat Buchanan said, well, that was just coincidence. Oh, bite me, Buchanan. Just coincidence. So here we are with the Obama thing. A truly decent man who probably, and I don't email me. Don't email me, the purists. Don't email me. You know who you are. Lance Bill and John and who else? Who else? Who else? Don't email me about Obama not being willing to curse capitalism and turn the country around and so on and so forth. You know, I don't think anybody can do that. But Obama might be the guy to begin to lead us out. If we just had a breather, guys, that's all I'm saying, where we could then get to work on producing a true progressive, a true liberal. I understand Barack Obama is not a true progressive or a true liberal, but he is a damn sight better than the other two. But a decent man, a man who offers something intangible, just like Reagan did, that kind of, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. You know, kind of like Roosevelt. Here he is again. Here's a man who offers a chance to clean up our act, to clean out our minds. And so many white people are not going to vote for him because of his skin color. I've said it before. Sometimes I am just utterly, absolutely, crushingly ashamed to be a Caucasian. There are people in this country my age, a little bit younger than me, but over a certain age, who will go to hell before they vote for a black man. Or a black woman, for that matter. Will go to hell before they will do that. That racism, that ugliness is so deeply embedded, they can't get past it. They just can't. I'll vote for McCain if Obama is the, you know, Obama, Osama. That sounds a lot alike. Hum. I'm not voting for him. He might be a Muslim. No, 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 no. His father was a black man. That's why you're not going to vote for him. It just sometimes it just really does feel kind of hopeless. But, you know, then you know, I'll turn on the TV tomorrow and I'll hear one of those Barack Obama speeches where there may not be a lot of depth, but whatever he lacks in depth, he makes up for in idealism and hope. Don't email me, guys. Don't email me about, you know, there was a corporate entity. Don't email me about his position on Israel. Don't email. I understand. I really do. But there's something about Barack Obama that Hillary Clinton will never have. And John McCain, I mean, it might as well be some sort of alien life form to McCain. And it's hope. And it's just a way of inspiring people, myself included, to roll the dice one more time, to take one more chance on okay, let's do it. Let's roll the dice on this country one more time. We can get away from torture. We can get away from unprovoked illegal wars. We can somehow rebuild our economy on a different basis. We can do it. Come on, let's roll the dice one more time. That's what Barack Obama does for me. But you know, Mike, he's a Negro. We're back. Cut the music. Oh, man. While we are in the break, I get this email. You know, McCain opposes, there's a bill in the Senate for equal pay, and it's in the Senate because the Supreme Court ruled in a 5-4 ruling last year to throw out a complaint from a woman, a supervisor at the Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company in Gadsden, Alabama. Yeah, we still have Goodyear Tire and Rubber Companies in America. Lily Ledbetter is her name. She sued for pay discrimination just before retiring after a 19-year career there. By the time she retired, Ms. Ledbetter was making almost $7,000 less than the lowest paid male supervisor and claimed earlier decisions by supervisors kept her from making more. Now, excuse me, last year the case made its way to the Supreme Court, and they voted 5-4. You can figure out real quick who the five were, to throw out her complaint. Why? Because she waited too long to sue. They don't judge the merits of the case. They just said, well, you waited too long. Well, John McCain, who is making his straight talk tour through all these poverty-stricken cities and towns, said today that he opposes a Senate bill that seeks to make right what the Supreme Court said, what the Supreme Court made wrong. There's an effort to pass a bill, the Equal Pay Bill, in the Senate. McCain says he's against that. Why? He's against equal pay for women because it would lead to more lawsuits. Now, all of you Republican women who are going to vote for this freakish Republican, keep that in mind. He considers you to be less than your male counterpart. Now, I know for a lot of Republican women, that's okay with them. That's okay. What's wrong with that, Mike? I am, we have a God-centered family here, and my husband is the leader of my servanthood or something. I don't know. He went to Promise Keepers and they explained it all to him, but he forgot it. I guess the beer he drank on the way home. But, you know, he's the boss. He's the boss here. So equal pay, equal schmay. Now, I want my husband to make more money than me because he's my husband and God wills it that way. Senate Republicans killed the bill tonight on a 56-42 vote that denied the measure the 60 votes needed to advance it to the full Senate. Now, there are not 56 Republican senators. So what that means is some Democratic senators said to the women of America, Sorry, baby. You don't belong in the workforce anyway. Get your ass at home. We do now. If you want to come to work, you're going to make less than men. McCain skipped the vote to campaign in New Orleans. And here's what he said. I'm all in favor, my friends, of pay equity for women, my friends. But this kind of legislation, my friends, as is typical of what's being proposed by my friends on the other side of the aisle, this kind of legislation opens up lawsuits for all kinds of problems. This is government, my friends, playing a much, much greater role in the business of a private enterprise system, my friends. And some of you people are going to vote for John McCain because you don't like the fact that Barack Obama had a black father. Oh, God, that's really a strategically smart move on your part, white people. You'll show that uppity Barack with the weird name, won't you? Huh? Get down, boy. We don't mind you being a senator, but president? Oh, in a pig's ass. No, I don't think so. Democratic National Committee spokeswoman Karen Finney said, quote, at a time when American families are struggling to keep their homes and jobs while paying more for everything from gasoline to groceries, how on earth would anyone who thinks he can lead our country also thinks it's acceptable to oppose equal pay for America's mothers, wives, and daughters? How? Well, Karen, I understand your question is 98.6% rhetorical, but how? Very simply, he is a Republican. He is a white man. A white man Republican. Are you kidding? Women are not to get equal pay, and people of color are to know their place. A 71-year-old white man in America? Do you think that guy for one moment considers racial or gender equality as a reality? Oh, please! He's on the wrong side of the dividing line. He's on my side of the dividing line. And people in my generation, white ethnics, Caucasian ethnics, who have watched their jobs go to China, who are close to losing their homes, or if they haven't lost their homes, they own it, but they've watched it go from $14,000 back in the 50s when they bought it to $50,000 in the 70s to $90,000 8 years ago, and now it's worth about $40,000 again. So there goes that retirement plan, right? But they're going to vote Republican again. You know why? Because John McCain won't let the queers get married, and Hillary Clinton's a woman, and Barack Obama is a Negro. Did you hear that story on our Nova M network, radio network streaming news about praying for lower prices at the pump? Please stop me before I grab a butcher knife and plunge it into my own heart. Please, somebody stop me. Rocky Twyman. I don't know where the story's. In Washington, D.C. Rocky Twyman says nothing else has worked, so he's urging motorists to pray for lower gasoline prices when they fuel up. Twyman says he and his fellow volunteers at a church soup kitchen launched Pray at the Pump today at a gas station in D.C. After fueling up their cars, Twyman says they bowed their heads and asked God for cheaper gas. He says other motorists joined in and the service station owner didn't run them off. Twyman says that if God brought down the walls of Jericho when the ancient Hebrews prayed them down, then divine intervention can bring down gas prices too. Kathy, when we're over finish the show tonight, hide the sharps in the house. Hide the sharps. And do I still have any of that stuff from my last dental surgery?
Vicodin.
Vicodin. Do I have any of that around? If I do, flush it. Because I may eat 20 or 30 of them and then follow it with a bottle of Jack Black. They're praying for gas prices to come down. Oh, please, please, please tell me this story isn't true.
Well, Sonny Perdue prayed for rain in Atlanta, and it rained.
No, it didn't. Yeah, he prayed for rain after getting the long-range weather forecast and looking out over Alabama where it was all cloudy and the westerly winds were blowing. Oh, never mind. Praying for lower gas prices at the pump. Praying for lower gas prices at the pump. That one's not going to sink in. That one, I'm just kind of sitting here thinking, okay, what should I do now? John McCain saying he's not for equal pay for women. And these clowns who volunteered a soup kitchen praying for rain. Or, I mean, praying for gas. Praying for lower gas. Oh, Jesus, never mind. Lynn writes in, "Hi, Mike. The very people who are so patriotic and so proud of the greatness of this country usually have the smallest minds in understanding what the greatness of this country should be and would not vote for Obama because he's a black or worse, because of his name. Thus showing that they themselves are not really patriots of this great democracy, but shallow and small-minded riders on the backs of all of those who have built this country. They don't belong in the modern 21st American century. They belong in the 16th, witch-burning, name-calling, guilt-by-association century." Lynn. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Prices are going up because the demand for oil outstrips the supply for oil. Oil's going up because we use too much oil. That's why the price of oil's going up.
Oh, thank you, your moronness. That was very nice of you to take time out from your Game Boy to explain to us why the prices of oil are going up. Regarding the prayer for prices, Lee in New York City writes, "If people really believe that water can be turned into wine, praying for lower prices makes sense. Better yet, they should fill their gas tanks with water and pray that Jesus turns it into 93 octane." Yeah, now see, if these prayer people in D.C. were really serious, that's exactly what they would do. Julie is calling from Scottsdale, listening on KPHX. Hey, Julie.
Hi, Mike. I have been a fan for such a long time, and I always want to call, but I just never get a chance, so I'm glad I got to call.
Well, here you are.
I know. I just want to let you know, since we're talking about gas here, I spent more today on gas than I ever have. I'm in the Phoenix area. And, you know, we had that one, you know, crisis here. I don't know what you want to call it, but the pipeline broke coming up from Tucson, and there was lines for gas here a couple years ago. And even then, even, you know, when they first, you know, when the criminals first took over, it's just, I don't know. And that's what I originally called in for. And then I thought you brought up, you know, Mr. Reagan. And it reminded me of my son coming home from the Scottsdale schools here where all the Republicans are. And his teacher explaining to the class how, you know, Reaganomics was working and his opinion about that. And, you know, I almost lost my mind with that one. So it's just, I don't know. It's you're getting screwed coming or going here right now, and
you know what? Do you know what is so weird about this, Julie, is that how many votes do you think John McCain is going to get this November? 10, 20, 30 million? I'm not sure how many people vote anymore. But you know that he's going to get at least 45, 48, 49% of the vote. You know that's going to happen. So if 100 million people vote, that means 45 million people are going to vote for him. How do you explain that? Because I can't. I give up trying.
Well, you know, when you were talking about racism and all these other issues we have, and you said it was a Caucasian issue, and I really think it's an American issue. I know that it's not exclusive because obviously there's apartheid and all these other things, but, you know, America is so backwards. We are so behind the times of most of the Western world, and this religion and, all this other stuff. It's just we're so far behind. We're so not progressive. And anytime somebody, you know, puts this, I'm a war hero. I'm going to do this. People are just, they're gullible. They're stupid. They're watching their, American Idol. They're not paying attention. And they're being lied to constantly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just before your program was on the Jeff Ferries show, he had, what's her name, the elderly lady that's the only reporter that asked any questions anymore.
Helen Thomas?
Yeah, and he had her on talking about that Perino woman that we all can't stand lying to our faces about torture. And it's like, you know, the press, no, the TV press, nobody's doing anything. Everybody is, they're in La-La Land.
That's
America
true.
Is in frigging La-La Land. Nobody's paying attention to what's going on right under their nose.
Well, you know what? I think what is happening is going to get our attention. We're facing multiple, if not crises, certainly major problems, and it's like it's all coming to a peak, and every single drop of it is the fault of George Bush because he's failed to provide leadership. He has failed in every every way you can measure. This man has failed. He's failed his entire life. But when the Supreme Court made him president, it guaranteed this country was going to travel very fast and smash into a brick wall. Here we are, brick wall. Say hello to America. And that's where we're at. And maybe that's what it's going to take. Maybe it's going to take just an absolute massive shock for people to realize that the Republicans and conservatism is a dead, archaic, useless form of government that needs to be thrown into a garbage disposal somewhere, chewed up, made into mush and flushed into the sewage system. It is useless. It is worse than useless. It's killed our country. It has destroyed our country. I hope we can get it back. I really do. Julie, thanks. Let me move on. I appreciate you checking in. All right? All right. You take care. Paul writes in regarding Obama possibly being a white man. Paul's in Pennsylvania. He writes, Mike, to be a Jew, your mother has to be a Jew. If your mom wasn't, but your dad was, you ain't. Therefore, since Obama's mama was white, Obama's white, not black. Get it straight already, Mike. By the way, in Pennsylvania, we had massive amounts of people changing parties so they could vote in the Democratic primary. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Culture, every person, every being. Your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, cause I am a patriot.
Tonight, how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Have I mentioned it? Yeah, I have. I think I have. CJ writes, Mike, I just heard the story about the idiot praying for lower gas prices. What a fool. If he really wants to affect change, stop buying the damn high-ass gas. How about praying for Iraq? How about praying for the poor, unemployed people who pass through his soup kitchen? I'm so sick of these people, sick of the election news, sick of the generally bad news, sick of this damn country. All right, now, CJ, calm down. Calm down. We are trapped in a Monty Python skit, and we will get out of this. Really. All right, y'all got a minute? Epi10 sent this to me. All right, now sit down for a second. This is you're going to have to put your thinking caps on a little bit here, just a little bit. Okay. Epi writes in. Here's a famous, disturbing analogy of the human predicament as illustrated by Dr. Albert Bartlett, Professor Emeritus of Physics at the University of Colorado. At 11 a.m., place one bacterium with a doubling rate of 1 minute into an empty jar such that at 12 noon you observe the jar to be full. What time do you think the jar was half full? 11:59 a.m. Right. Going backwards then, at 5 minutes to 12, the jar was only 3% full, 97% free space and open for development. If you were a bacterium at 5 minutes to 12 with 97% free space, would you be worried that you were running out of space? Nah. Now, jump ahead 3 minutes. So it is now 2 minutes to noon, and the jar is one quarter full. At 2 minutes to 12, there's still three quarters of empty space left, but the smart bacteria in the jar have a meeting and decide just to be on the safe side, they should get three more jars. Their wish is magically granted, and they are all proud of their ingenious foresight. The smartest bacterium assure the rest of the population that they're in no danger of running out of space for years to come. Remember now, the time is 2 minutes to noon. At 1 minute to noon, the jar is half full. And at 12 noon, the jar is full, as per the condition at the outset. At 12:01, the second jar is full. At 12:02, the last remaining jar is full. And that's all she wrote. So, Mike, what time are we at here on Earth? Cheap oil has granted us growth in every conceivable human endeavor, but this illustrates just how dangerous growth is. Get small. Fast. You folks are in great form tonight. You really are. Jules writes in. Good evening, Mike. Doubt you remember, I'm the law school student who can't finish his last blank semester because I can't pay up. Funny blank, huh? Wanted to thank you again for the work you do every night, and your wife as well. I also wonder what the hell is going on. And your wife is absolutely correct about watching or hearing the news and asking yourself, what the hell is this, the Soviet Union? I have to be honest. I think we don't have much of an ice cube's chance in hell to turn this thing around, as evidenced by Hillary's win in Pennsylvania. Mike, I know you're busy and probably don't have the time tonight, but could you please explain to these blanks that Hillary, and yes, to a certain extent Obama, is just another corporate whore? I mean, come on. If she's willing to lie, cheat, and steal her way to the presidency, what makes these people wonder if she'd be willing to roll back this new, or at least out in the open, fascist government power structure and the accompanying imperial presidency? I mean, if she would tell a bold face lie about being shot at in Bosnia in order to assume the most powerful office in the world, what the hell would she try to get away with when she's protected by executive privilege and national security? What the blank is wrong with these blank, blank people? Oh, blank, we're blanked. Have a great night, Mike. Jules.
You know, one thing that's really bugging me about Hillary that I don't think has gotten enough coverage, at least I want to cover it some more.
Maureen O'Dowd didn't cover it today?
Well, I love that column. Woo! So good. But no, it's her assertion that, well, she's won the popular vote if you count Michigan and Florida, that more people have voted for her. And again, her bid is to.
Oh, I know. It's maddening. It's just maddening.
I'm thinking, okay, well, if your name is the only name on the ballot and therefore you get more votes because, you know, like, your name is the only name on the ballot. Can you really count that as some sort of valid affirmation from the voters if, you know, your name is the only name on the ballot?
How many Hillary supporters are aware she said that today? See, that's the thing.
Or didn't make the connection when she says, I think we ought to count Michigan and Florida because that way, you know, I've won the popular vote. If you look at all the states, if we counted now, I disagree with what the Democratic Party did when they, I didn't like the changing of the primary. I didn't like any of it. I don't think they should have handled it that way. I think those votes should have counted, but I think they should have counted naturally where you would have had, you know, both names on the ballot.
Or three or four names on the ballot.
Right, and given the voters a choice. But if the choice is Hillary or write in your own person, and...
No, if your choice is Hillary or nothing else.
Or undeclared, I think, is what 40% of the people voted or something like that. And then for her to climb up and down and say, well, I've got a mandate in Michigan because, you know, I won the popular vote there, most of the vote... Well, how do you know? That really bugs me.
Captain Mary in Memphis writes in, if there is a gourd, I think she means God. If there is a gourd, like the genie in the bottle, these folks had better be very specific about how they pray for cheap gas. They better inform the great gourd that the cheap gas is intended to go into their car gas tanks. Otherwise, they might be treated to free gas at the new Kellogg Brown and Root concentration camps. My, Captain Mary writes, aren't we cheerful little hamsters this evening? I surely am. I met an angry person yesterday, and we'd agreed on almost all points of politics, despite our initial differences. The person was angry because he'd voted for Bush, and, well, you know the rest. As we parted, he was asking what the tipping point is for armed revolution. Disclaimer, as a pacifist myself, I'm not qualified to answer, but the question does deserve some attention. Reckon we could get it put on that TV machine? And if in that gaseous prayer vigil works out, you might tell those folks that my house needs some repairs too. Keep it lit with the lamp from heaven. Heaven is Kevin's younger sister, and she sure was kind to lend me that lamp. Divinely yours, Captain Mary in Memphis. Yeah. I hear you. Carolyn in Texas writes in about equal pay. Is this a great country or what? I watched the millionaire Republicans vote against equal pay for women. I'm sure it doesn't affect anyone they know, so who cares? When I was a divorced mother of three, I had a coworker who had retired officer's pay complain that a woman got the same pay he did. I had to explain to him that my children had this habit called eating. It shut him up. Well, you were lucky, Carolyn. It's a wonder he didn't say, all right, look, lady, a hungry child is an alert child, so... Prairie 2 writes in, Mike, the airlines buy fuel far in advance to avoid price spikes, but the relatively cheap fuel they bought is gone. They estimate now they need a 20% across-the-board fare increase, but market research says the flying public won't tolerate that. Remember when the only time flyers prayed was during turbulence? Now they will be forming prayer circles at the ticket counter. Oh, my God. You know, isn't that the mark of an absolute decline? Isn't this an historical, classical mark of decline of a civilization? When rationality and science and logic are tossed aside and in place, we start making marks in the dirt with a stick or piling up rocks and burning a goat on top of the pile or... We start praying to invisible sky beings or little elves. Well, elves are real. Little creatures that hide and peek around, little demon-headed things. And all those Hieronymus Bosch paintings come to life. And you hear chirpings and gnashings of teeth and pittering patterings. And isn't that one of the signs of a civilization going, straight to hell?
Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a color TV? Dialing $4 is trying to find me. I wait for delivery each day until 3. So, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a color TV? Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a night on the town? I'm counting on you, Lord. Please don't let me down. Prove that you love me and buy the next round. Oh, Lord, won't you...
Who are the people making money?
Snack them chips.
While the rest of us are hurting.
Choose gas or food.
Big oil companies, their shareholders and friends.
My back.
Go ask those guys at Halliburton.
I'll scratch your...
We can't afford our gasoline. The prices have become obscene.
10 before the hour, I got an email here from Jeremy in Youngstown. Yeah, Youngstown. I got it about 45 minutes ago, so let me share it with you. Hello, Mike. I live in the Youngstown area and cannot believe the tripe coming from the rotten mouth of McCain. How dare he come to one of the worst hit areas of the country by the free trade madness and tell us that we need to continue it? To hell with you, McCain. Not only has your evil political philosophy utterly destroyed us, but you come here and rub our faces in it and tell us that we need more? I'm one of the lucky individuals. I currently have a well-paying job by local standards, $17.10 an hour for semi-skilled factory labor. I do, however, have to drive 45 minutes to get to work, blanking away a good chunk of my check every week. The company I work for manufactures kitchen cabinets, and not only am I getting hit with the gas prices, but the devastated housing market is closing in on us quickly. I often wonder what I can do to improve my situation. I'm a relatively intelligent human being. I possess tons of work ethic and technical skills, and I have a strong drive to absorb everything around me and master everything that interests me. I suppose I would be in good shape elsewhere where the local economy is not quite as bleak as it is in this right-wing created cesspool. I feel as if I'm a sitting duck, just waiting for my job to be eliminated, which I am. I have sent my resume and applications to hundreds of companies, and either the pay is dismally low or the jobs that pertain to my skill set only offer temporary work. So for John McCain to suggest that what we need is training, I am nothing short of outraged and insulted. Skills mean next to nothing here. Without jobs, all the skills in the world are useless. Sure, I could go the entrepreneur route, only to allow the larger companies to use their subsidized stomping power to knock me out before I even get in the ring. Effing incredible, the nerve of these neocon thieves. Sorry for the rant, but I know you understand where I'm coming from. Thanks for listening. Jeremy, Youngstown. Yeah, I know where you're coming from, pal. And James writes in, Mike, one can hope, this is a subject line, says the age of Aquarius. Mike, one can hope that as enough people are forced to eat out of garbage cans and live in the streets of the Midwest, the sneaky thought that will dawn on them is that they may have been had. However, I'm afraid that we may be subject to the first mass movement of homeless who protest for permanent capital gains tax cuts. I think, James writes, the Kool-Aid is more evil than we thought, or maybe we have overestimated human beings to an absurd degree. P.S. Obama will have a shot in Indiana for one reason. Indiana is less ethnic than Pennsylvania or Ohio. Then again, Indiana was the birthplace of the Klan. Yeah, that's where it was born, and it was reborn not far from where we live here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains in Stone Mountain, Georgia. I take Molly there sometimes. Kathy takes her there, too. And we climb the mountain or ride the, what do they call it, the sky bucket? Cable car up the side. Or we go to the playground there. And I try to imagine what it was like when the Klan was reborn on the top of Stone Mountain. Clarification here, James, about the vote on the fairness, the fair wage bill in the Senate. He writes, it was one of those cloture vote deals where it needed 60 votes to pass. You know, ever since 2006, everything takes 60 votes or it dies. So all the Democrats voted for it. But for Senator Reid, who voted no for procedural reasons, he can now bring it back. And James, and thanks, James, he sent me, the yeses included all the Democrats, plus Norm Coleman of Minnesota, Susan Collins of Maine. Who else here? The Republicans or independents. Bernie Sanders, independent from Vermont. Smith of Oregon. Snow of Maine, the Republican. And Arlen Specter of PA and Sununu of New Hampshire. So those six or seven Republicans voted with the Democrats, and it still wasn't enough. All the rest of the Republicans voted no. Ain't gonna be no equal pay for no bitches. No, bitches can stay home. You can do your work at home. When we come back, we're going to do lots of phone calls. So if you're not on hold, if you want to get there, 800-989-1480. This is from Kyle in Detroit. Mike, hello again. And oh, my God, Hillary's victory is being analyzed by the cheerleaders within the Democratic Party, the Republican thugs and populists who weep. This whole thing has turned into water cooler jokes for conservaticans. and cynicism by fellow Democrats. I hope she's proud. What'd she say in 1995? Screw 'em. Talking about the lunchbox crowd. Senator Obama has reached many of us, not in the ways that John Edwards or Dennis Kucinich could have, yet he extended his intellect, his promise of hope, and a freshness we may not have seen since Robert F. Kennedy. You mentioned the soccer mom's motivation for not voting Obama. You mentioned the racists in PA. You mentioned the idiots who say, if it's Obama, I'm voting McCain, etc. This is where Obama has failed us. He fails to hammer Clinton's distortions of her votes. He fails to mention that McCain's 100-year war could land that little soccer player in Iraq, armed and pissed. He fails to mention that taking the higher road united many progressives and left behind Poe, dumb Democrats. Mike, you're spot on, and sadly, this is where we are in a country that brags how far we have come. Kyle in Detroit. We'll be back after the break. Stick around, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. We'll be right back. about 7 past the hour. Welcome back. In the context of a larger email, Tom in Connecticut wrote today and has a question. Would our politicians even blink an eye and nuke Israel if it attacked Iran? In reference to Hillary's statement the other night that she would obliterate Iran if it had the temerity to attack Israel. What if Israel attacked Iran? Would we nuke Israel? Well, no. No. And let's see here. Just a couple more things, and we're coming to the telephones here. Under the heading of Christian leaders favor torture, there's a website, SOTT.net, SOTT.net. The SOTT stands for Signs of the Times, SOTT.net. they write about James Dobson, the founder of Focus on the Family, has criticized Republican presidential candidate Senator John McCain because McCain opposes the U.S. government's use of torture. Did you know Christian leaders favor torture? Did you know that? Supporting torture, it says here, appears to be an important issue for Dobson and many of the Christian right. In an exclusive with the Wall Street Journal published April 2nd, Dobson did not explain his approval of torture or how it relates to the Christian life. Robert Parham, writing at ethicsdaily.com, says how he contorts Christian theology to justify this is a puzzle. End quote. If this pro-torture stand was Dobson's alone, there would be little attention paid to it. But last month, an ethics professor, Daniel Heimbach at Southeastern Baptist Seminary, said he favors torture as much as Dobson does. The Southern Baptist Convention leaders also favor torture. A Baptist press release reported that to oppose torture threatens to undermine Christian moral witness in contemporary culture. What? If you oppose torture, you're undermining Christian moral witness in contemporary culture. This is unbelievable. Now, see, most Jews know about this because the Jews had to deal with the Christians in Europe during the run-up to World War II. And the Christians in Central Europe had no problem whatsoever with the rounding up and extermination of the Jews. The Christians in America, a huge percentage of them, at least the spokespersons for a huge percentage of them, Southern Baptist Convention is second only to the Catholic Church in terms of bulk numbers. The Christians in America have no problem, apparently, acquiescing to their leaders' pro-torture stance. The National Association of Evangelicals, however, recently released a statement that the United States has crossed, quote, the boundaries of what is legally and morally permissible in the war on terror, end quote. National Association of Evangelicals, gee, that must be a communist organization, to actually come out and say, nah, we've crossed the boundaries of what is morally permissible. Anyway, the ethics professor, Daniel Heimbach at Southeastern Baptist Seminary, says such talk from the National Association of Evangelicals, that we've crossed the boundaries of what is legally morally permissible, such talk undermines the Christian moral witness. He says nothing could be more confusing to people in the pew than to have a professor of ethics speak out in favor of torture. No, that's not what he said. That's what the NAE said. Nothing could be more confusing than to have a professor of ethics speak out in favor of torture. You know, up is down, right? We're through the looking glass. How does a Christian teacher ignore the overriding attitude of the New Testament and the values of turning the other cheek or love your enemies? The writer here says, supporting just wars are acceptable to many people, but torture of a suspect goes beyond the pale. Governments for centuries have made claims they do not torture. Another claim is when they use torture,
it's an emergency.
Egypt declared such an emergency in 1981. It's still in force, and torture is common. That's something that always turns my stomach and makes me even more grateful that I am not a Christian or a believer in any of this religious nonsense, because it would put me into a real twisted sister form of contortion. If I were a Christian and knew that a massive, if not majority, but plurality of my professed religion believed in torture, believed it was morally acceptable, that it was a proper tool to use. And at the same time, I tried to study the teachings of Jesus, I think I would have some sort of a mental, or spiritual for certain, breakdown. Complete. Dobson to me is one of those little demons that was spewed up on a gaseous output from Satan, and all of a sudden James Dobson shows up. There's so many of these Christians like him. How often do you hear in America a Muslim imam or a Jewish rabbi talking about, well, you know, torture's okay? I'll tell you, the Christian faith is going to hell in a handbasket, isn't it? Now, I know a lot of people say, no, Mike, not the faith, just some of the spokespeople. Well, if the faith can produce these people, then the faith itself is degenerate. If the faith can produce these kinds of people, it itself is degenerate. My goodness. Oh, and last thing here for this little chunk of the program. This is from Lancaster in the UK. It's another very interesting news website, rinf.com. R-I-N like Nelly, F like Frank, rinf.com. The writer there says, Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff in the U.S. has badly stumbled in discussing the Bush administration's push to create stricter identity systems. Chertoff was recently in Canada discussing, among other topics, the so-called Server in the Sky program to share fingerprint databases among the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and Australia. In a recent briefing with Canadian press, which has yet to be picked up in the U.S., Chertoff made the startling statement that fingerprints are, quote, not particularly private, end quote. The question was, Mr. Chertoff, some are raising the question that the privacy aspects of this thing, you know, sharing of that kind of data, very personal data, among four countries is quite a scary thing. Chertoff, well, first of all, a fingerprint is hardly personal data, because you leave it on glasses and silverware and articles all over the world. They're like footprints. They're not particularly private. All right, stop me, Kathy, before I scream. Yeah, push right there on my throat. Push. Thank you. All right, stop pushing so I can breathe. The writer says, many of us should rightfully be surprised that our fingerprints aren't considered personal data by the head of the Department of Homeland Security. Even more importantly, the Department of Homeland Security itself disagrees. It disagrees with itself. In its definition of personally identifiable information, the information that triggers a privacy impact assessment, the department specifically lists biometric identifiers such as fingerprints. So Chertoff, Mr. of the Devil, Chertoff says that your fingerprints are not particularly private information. All together now. This is madness.
Make sure the world's behaving right. I don't mean to bust your groove. Think it's time we made a move. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free tonight.
Each time you listen to Right Wing Radio, God kills a kitten.
I thought you got rid of that one. From one of our writers, I think from Hawaii, regarding race in politics. Everyone is mad at Obama for not fighting back. The reality is that we are still in a place, based on our cultural legacy, where if he, a black man, goes after a white woman, he's finished. And Obama knows it. Yeah, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, I think. Yeah, he is in that position, and the Clintons know it. And America knows it. And but like one of our earlier writers said, if you apply the Jewish rule, Obama is not a black man. I'm sorry, black folks. He is a Caucasian. Because if you apply the Jewish rule, his mother was white, so therefore he's white. Don't be fooled by the dark skin. See how insane it's become? Steve is calling from Gainesville, Georgia, listening on Sirius. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. You caught me off guard. I was on your website there. We need a plan. heard you come back. Letting the Republicans win.
Yeah.
I'm like you now. Obama represents the only hope that we got, and if they give it to Hillary, I mean, that's essentially two Republicans running against each other.
It is indeed. It certainly is, in my opinion.
Yeah, she just more the same. So if she gets the nomination, just either way, you're voting for Republicans. So let them, you know, be in the House when it crumbles. You know, I think the only option, like a email you got earlier, is to get in the streets. It seems like the people of this country just sleep and, you know, don't really give a darn.
You know, I'm just wondering, because I don't live too far from you, Steve. You live in Gainesville, and I live in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, too. And I want to ask you something. You sound like you're a Democrat. I'm going to assume you're a Democrat, and so am I. What are we going to do come Election Day this November? What are you going to do? If you're a Democrat and I'm a Democrat, what are you going to do?
Well, I'm like you. Obama wasn't my candidate. My first one was Dennis Kucinich and then John Edwards. And, you know, the media took both of them out. And we're left with what choices we got. The only hope of the three is Obama, because, hell, if Hillary's a Democrat, God's a billy goat.
Well, I'm hip. But I guess what I'm saying is, since you and I both know that this great state of Georgia, since Tom Murphy passed, is absolutely going to go Republican across the board. It is already, just about, with the exception of John Lewis and who's the representative, Kathy, that took Cynthia McKinney's seat. Drawing a blank on his name, I'm real embarrassed because he's my representative. But other than those two, and I think there's one more, the entire congressional delegation and the entire Senate and House here in Georgia and the governor's office is controlled by Republicans. So that means that you and I go to the polls this November and we vote for Barack Obama, and it's crushed because of the Electoral College. You and I will not exist. Our votes don't exist anyway. Come Election Day or the day after. Because this state is going to go Republican, and that means all of the state's electoral votes will go for McCain. So, based on that, what are you going to do? Are you going to go vote?
Yes, I'm going to vote one way or the other. If Obama's not on the ballot, what choice do we have? You either vote for Hillary or McCain, and that's both for the same cause in my book. So, you know, Obama is not representing the Democrats.
Yeah.
You know, you might as well vote for McCain. I'm a true Democrat, but they, you know, if they take it from Obama and give it to, they don't really give a darn about what we want anyhow.
That's very true, Steve. Listen, thank you, pal. I appreciate you checking in. I do. It's, you know, Steve wouldn't say it, but I will. You know, it's hell being a Caucasian male Democrat in Georgia. it's really hell. That's why so often on a Sunday, you know, I'll drive over near Gainesville. It's a beautiful little city, Gainesville, Georgia. It's a very pretty little town, about 50 miles north of Atlanta. Take a ride over there in my pickup truck. Put the shotgun on the gun rack.
If you got the wrong bumper stickers on that truck, you better just keep on driving.
No, I have the right bumper stickers. Nobody can figure out what. Somebody sent me one that says, "Have I told you yet tonight how much I hate these people?" Mike Malloy. And the other one is Kerouac.com. And nobody knows what the hell that means.
Patriot Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
C'est si bon de se dire des mots doux, de petits rien du tout, mais qui en disent en langue, en voyant notre mineur.
That's for our Canadian listeners.
Nous envie.
Comment dites-vous en français, our Canadian listeners? Let's put that in the babble fish and see how it comes up. All right, back to your phone calls. Diane is calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on the internet. Hi, Diane.
Hello. I wanted to commend Kathy for noticing that Hillary has said that she won Michigan and keeps saying this over and over and over again, and no one seems to notice.
I didn't realize she had started making that claim until Kathy pointed it out to me earlier today, and it's like, no, that can't be true. But apparently it is.
Well, she's been doing this for months, literally. And as somebody who lives in Michigan and actually worked the election, lots of people didn't go and vote and said, you know, they didn't vote because we were told our votes would not count.
Right.
I also talked to people who not only stayed home, but their kids went to vote. A kid got to the polls, you know, it was their first election, and saw Hillary's name on and didn't see anybody else's name on, voted for Hillary, didn't want Hillary, but thought that's what she had to do. I'm sure that people did that. And, I mean, to say that I don't want our delegates seated, I don't want anyone to be able to say that election was a valid election.
Well, it's very reminiscent of the elections in the old Soviet Union when 97% of the vote would go for Brezhnev or Kosygin or whoever it was at the time, and that was simply because there was only one name on the ballot. Does Hillary Clinton not realize that what she is asking now? I had heard Diane that she had claimed those votes should be counted, but today is the first day I heard that she claimed ownership of those votes. But is she not aware? Is she not aware that this is a Soviet Union tactic? This is what happens in totalitarian states. There's one name on the ballot. Everyone knows that the election is a sham insofar as real democracy, and yet the dictator or the ruling party claims, well, I see, 97% of the people voted for me. So in the case of Michigan, where there was only her name on the vote, does she not realize that? I realize you don't know the answer to that question, neither do I. But it just sounds to me like, Hillary, do you realize what you're saying?
Well, she's got to realize what she's saying because she says stuff like that in other areas. I used to think Hillary was, you know, okay. Mm-hmm. But now, after watching her performance throughout this campaign, where she never admits defeat, she never congratulates Obama on her wins, he always congratulates her when she wins. Mm-hmm. Just little things like that over and over, not to mention all the big sniping attacks. And over, I win all the big primary states. She never says, yeah, well, I win the primaries, not the caucuses, because Republicans cross over to vote for me
right.
or their, you know, fraudulent elections like the one in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's just hell on obviously you're a Democrat, so am I. It's just hell on a real Democrat. To see this going on, it's almost like Hillary is casting herself in some of our minds as the opposition candidate, when the opposition candidate should be John McCain. But as the New York Times said today, Maureen Dowd's column, and in the editorial, and Kathy wrote about this today at the Malloy blog site at novamradio.com, as both Maureen Dowd and the editorial board said, more or less, she's got to stop. She must stop this. What the hell is she doing? What is the point here? It's not like Hillary can't get it in her mind that the nomination, the Democratic Party nomination to run for president, is not and was not hers. It was up for grabs, and Barack Obama is kicking her ass. But she's not going to back out until she completely claws him to death. And poor Barack Obama, and I'm not trying to be a wise guy here, but poor Barack Obama, seriously, what is he going to do? The one time he referred to as Annie Oakley in a throwaway line that I thought was sort of funny, The media in this country, the racist media in this country, the Republican conservative media who wants to see her as president because they know she's a conservative Republican, the media jumped all over Barack Obama because he said, oh, man, she comes out like she's Annie Oakley, you know, with all that gun and I'm a hunter and all this other crap. I thought it was a pretty cool line. But the New York Times, even this morning, once again castigated Barack Obama for using that line, which was a funny line. This is astonishing stuff. I'm going to go insane. How about you, Diane?
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know what I noticed today
what?
Is that now her new spin is, I'm a fighter and I'm never going to give up because we need a fighter in the White House. You know, what does that say? All of a sudden, you know, We want somebody who only wants power, like you said, in the Politburo, that's going to, you know, assassinate your enemies because they're a fighter and this is a good thing. It's just ridiculous.
It's maddening. Diane, thanks for checking in, all right?
Bye, thanks.
All right, take care. I wish we were on a station in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I really do.
And let's not forget something else that Hillary has said that's just, I don't know if she's trying to channel John McCain or what, but that she'd be perfectly willing to obliterate Iran if it dared to attack Israel. Now, I just love this. I'm trying to figure out what Democratic Party line she's following. What contingency in her, I don't know, supporters wants to obliterate Iran? I'm trying to find the plank and the platform that said the Democrat, okay, so improve education and no more tax cuts for those, so obliterate Iran, increase the minimum wage. Oh, what? Does she really think that her constituents want to see Iran obliterated, or does she think that that's, you know, as this new image of hers is Diana the Huntress, that this is the,
I think it's called pandering.
This is the image she now has to, you know, once she's come out like Annie Oakley, I'll say it, I'm a white woman, that she's come out there, you know,
yeah,
doing what comes naturally, duck hunting like she's out there with Cheney every day. that she has to talk all tough on, okay, I'll obliterate Iran. Oh, well, that gives me some comfort.
Yeah, it makes me want to just rush out and, I don't know, carry people to the polls to vote for her.
What part of the Democratic platform is that?
Hers. No, it, you know what it is, Kathy. I understand your frustration. I feel the same way. But it's pandering. And some people say, well, it's pandering to the Likudnik vote in this country, the that part of the Jewish vote in the United States that is so pro-Israel that it can't see past, I don't know, its nuclear arsenal. And that's not true. That's not who she's pandering to. That particular segment of the American electorate doesn't need to be pandered to. And because they have their agenda clearly, distinctly in front of them. She is pandering to white males to let them know how hard-ass and tough she can be.
Well, and they also have their own political representative, and that's Joe Lieberman, and he's firmly next to McCain, and I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't end up as his running mate, and he's certainly going to end up in his cabinet.
The American Likudniks have Lieberman?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
You know, they don't need Hillary. They've got John McCain. If they've got
Well, that's
Lieberman.
What that's what I'm saying. Hillary was not pandering to the Jewish vote in this country. She was pandering to look at all the exit polls say that the vast majority of her supporters are non-college graduates. Now that's okay. I'm not a college graduate. That's okay. But the implication is, oh, and they're mostly white, and they're mostly ethnic, and what does she get? 70% of the Catholic vote. I can't. The only thing I can reduce this to, Kathy, is that the people, so many of the people who vote for her, are flat out racist. Now that is not a news flash. This is the United States of America in the year 2008. You would think, wouldn't you? But never mind. We're still where we were in 1958, pretty much. Oh, we've got all the laws and everything. But when you talk to white, blue collar ethnics about whether or not they're going to vote for a black man, the answer is going to be kind of a foot shuffling, stare at the ground, pick their nose, look up at the sky. Well, you know, I don't know. And you know what that means.
But those racists are usually also sexist. I mean, don't you just assume that vote's going McCain anyways?
It probably will.
I think most of her big support, and this may just be my tinfoil hat stuff working, our crossover voters are people who have no intention of supporting a Democrat in any way, shape, or form. They're voting for her in the primary because they think she's beatable. And I have to agree on one level. You just picture it in your head. Just draw the mental image of a debate between Hillary and McCain, roughly the same height, not that far apart in age, versus Barack and McCain. And you're just visualize it.
Well,
it'll be like Bush Sr. and Dukakis, where you wanted to get poor Dukakis a stepladder.
Yeah, but Barack would just absolutely devour McCain's lunch, eat him just raw.
And the Republicans know it.
We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be.
Is it 10 minutes before the show is over? It certainly is. Thanks to Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Chris in Minnesota, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Catherine Bay for their constant and uplifting participation in the production and delivery of this program. Are you a Nova M founding member yet? Why do I let this wait every night until the last minute, Kathy? I should talk about this a little bit earlier. When we have 36 listeners instead of 26. But if you're not a Nova M founding member, a Nova M Radio founding member, please consider it. Go to NovaMradio.com if you have a moment. Check out what it's all about and become a founder. We need you. I'll just state it categorically. We need you as part of the team.
He said part of the team.
Yeah, part of the team. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge, welcome to the program.
Well, hello there. How are you tonight?
I'm fair to partly cloudy. How are you?
Not bad for an old lady.
All right, now tell me about what's going to happen in Indiana when...
Well, when you get south of Route 30, you're pretty much in Republican country.
That's true, and Route 30 slices right across the top, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, you get Lake and Porter County, and then there's the rest of Indiana. And... It's going to be real interesting. Now, in primaries, you have to declare yourself. And what I'm kind of interested in finding out is to see the number of Democrats that suddenly appear in the state of Indiana
right.
that may ordinarily vote Republican. You follow?
Yeah, but do you have the same rule that, there that we have here? If you declare yourself, if you take a in the primary a Democrat or Republican a ballot, come the general, you got to vote the same way.
No.
Oh, you don't have that in Indiana?
No.
Well, that kind of sucks, doesn't it?
No, you can vote any damn way you want in the general. It's just a primary you got to declare yourself.
Well, that's one of the wonderful things.
Unless that's something that Mitch Daniels changed when I wasn't looking, but never bothered me any.
He's the one that privatized your interstate system, didn't he?
Oh, he's so cute. And he changed the time zone. That's something I'm going to be curious about. I guarantee you that on election night, Indiana results are going to be the first ones you hear on the news.
That's right.
It's always the first one, and they always go Republican. So yeah. It's going to be real interesting to see what happens.
Well, since this is a Democratic primary, and y'all can cross over without jeopardizing your vote in November, which I think is a horrible situation. That's one thing that I think Georgia is the tiniest bit progressive about. Of course, that the rule that we have here was passed under a Democratic leadership, but that is it's to stop that kind of nonsense. If you are going to vote Democrat in the Democratic primary, then by God, come the general election, you'll either stay home or you'll show up and vote Democrat.
Well, what can I tell you?
I know. But why you really called is...
Well, I got to get you to pay a little bit of attention to what's going on in the Chicago courts. This Resco trial.
Yeah.
Somebody named Aliotta showed up, and he made a deal with the government prosecutors, and he's only going to get 20 months instead of... I forget how long they said it might have been.
Yeah.
But... supposedly, back a couple of years, they were trying to make a deal to get Fitzgerald fired. And somebody in that little group claimed to go all the way up into Washington and try to deal with Karl Rove. Now, damn, this guy goes around, you know, making deals in the Justice Department and firing all kinds of prosecutors. And it's surprising as hell that he didn't go after Fitzgerald, because Fitzgerald was going after Scooter Libby.
Well, I think if the truth ever comes out, Marge, we're going to find out that Karl Rove...
dirty as hell?
Oh, just insidious little bastard, was all over the country while he was...
the Alabama Governor Siegelman?
All over the place. That his corrupt hand was in just so many state and local enterprises that we're not going to believe it if the truth ever comes out. But whether or not the truth will come out about Karl Rove,
thing that might make you feel just a tad better. Do you know anybody that likes to watch Boston Legal?
I used to watch it when I was unemployed, but I don't get to watch it.
I know
it
it's on while you're working.
Right.
And since somebody was chewing up my phone lines last night and I couldn't get through to anybody, I was watching it last night. And, oh, damn, the writers of that show have got to be so progressive. I know it's fiction, but it was a case that took the James Spader character in front of the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
and boy, did he read the riot act to them. I mean, he went back to their nominating positions when, you know, he told Clarence Thomas to put his magazine down. And, you would have loved it. Michael, copy of it, go find it someplace.
I love that show. I ought to just record it and watch it on the weekend. I love Boston Legal.
Last night was a real true winner. I swear, if you know anybody that recorded it and can get a copy of it, you'll love it, you know. I was laughing so hard all by myself, I couldn't call anybody because my phone was dead. But oh, is it good?
Marge, you need to get a computer so you can just email everybody.
Well, there's that, I suppose. But if the phone was dead, wouldn't those lines be down too?
Well, you need to have not
wireless.
Wireless. There you go.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to learn all those new fancy tricks. You know,
The day is coming. The day is coming when you will place yourself firmly in the 20th century. Even though we're already in the 21st, but you.
You're picking on me.
Not at all. I love you.
I got to get you to celebrate Cuatro de Mayo this year.
Cuatro de Mayo?
Cuatro de Mayo. Now ask me why.
Why?
Because that's my birthday.
Oh, the 4th of May. All right, Marge.
I'm finally going to get you to remember.
I will do it. Thanks, Marge.
Take care.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Cuatro de Mayo. 4th of May. Write that down, woman. See you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers.
Is Hillary here?
Thanks a lot for hanging out with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, keep it lit. This is NoVam Radio.